All right, Genesis 25, and we're in starting in verse 22. But we have, so that means that we've done wait, what chapter did I say? 25? I meant 24. Sorry, we're in 24.
I wrote down 25, so we have to go to 25.
Yeah. It's a long chapter, so I don't know if... You can read it later, Mike, okay?
Okay. I guess I'll scratch it.
Yeah, scratch. Next time, that's why you use pencil. You just erase it.
That's what I tell my students.
Yeah. When you're a pro, you don't need to. Okay. You can't help it when somebody else makes a mistake, right? So, Genesis 24, and so we did verses 1 to 21 last time, and... Anybody want to give us a big picture of those 21 verses? I'll just ask questions. Who's the main character so far in the chapter?
Servant?
Yeah, Abraham's servant. He's the one who's, we're seeing everything through his eyes. The beginning of the chapter is Abraham. Abraham gives the servant a mission. The mission is to go find a wife for Isaac. And not just any wife, but a wife who comes from where?
His kin.
From his kin, yeah. So Nahor from this particular family, right? And so he travels quite a ways, over 500 miles to go there. And he takes a caravan with him. And what does he take with him?
Thirsty camels,
yeah. How many?
10.
It takes 10 camels, and how many... well, it's up there. So that's getting ahead of ourselves. Okay, so when he gets to this spring of water where there's a well, he gets there in the evening, right when the women are, the time when the women would come out to draw water. And what does he do at that point?
Praise.
He prays. And he just prays this really generic prayer of like, God, I'm just thankful to be here. Right? Is that what he prays? No. What does he do? How does he pray?
Very specific.
Very specific.
This woman comes and waters me, but offers to water my camels.
Right. Yeah.
And then she runs.
Yeah. So the servant.
Sorry, that's not the prayer.
The servant say, yeah, and make sure that she runs the whole time, because if she takes a breather, we're done. The servant prays a very specific prayer. He's going to instigate with a woman. May I have a drink? And then not only will she give him a drink, but also offer of her own volition to water, his camels, which is a really big ask, right? Based on the calculations I made, which are right here, it's about 250 gallons that are necessary to water all of the camels to fill them up. And so guessing a whole lot, but about 33 trips up and down those stairs, and she runs the whole time. This woman is super. She does it all on her own, and that's where we left off at verse 21. The man gazed at her in silence to learn whether or not the Lord had prospered or given him success in his journey. So because it's not just the fact that happened, but she has to finish the job, right? So very specific in his prayer, and his prayer is essentially answered. So I'm going to read through... how far am I going to go? I'm going to go through verse 32 right now, and then we'll go from there. So when the camels had finished drinking, the man took a gold ring weighing a half shekel and two bracelets for her arms weighing 10 gold shekels and said, "Please tell me whose daughter you are. Is there room in your father's house for us to spend the night?" She said to him, I am the daughter of Bethuel, the son of Milcah, whom she bore to Nahor. She added, we have plenty of both straw and fodder and room to spend the night. The man bowed his head and worshiped the Lord and said, blessed be the Lord, the God of my master Abraham, who has not forsaken his steadfast love and his faithfulness toward my master. As for me, the Lord has led me in the way to the house of my master's kinsman. Then the young woman ran and told her mother's household about these things. Rebekah had a brother whose name was Laban. Laban ran out toward the man to the spring. As soon as he saw the ring and the bracelets on his sister's arms and heard the words of Rebekah, his sister, thus the man spoke to me, he went to the man. And behold, he was standing by the camels at the spring. He said, come in, O blessed of the Lord. Why do you stand outside? For I have prepared the house and a place for the camels. So the man came to the house and unharnessed the camels and gave straw and fodder to the camels. And there was water to wash his feet and the feet of the men who were with him. Then food was set before him to eat. But he said, I will not eat until I have said what I have to say. And he said, speak on. I read verse 33, didn't intend to. Okay, so what do you observe? And what questions do you have?
I always thought that giving her jewelry was odd.
Okay. Why do you think that's odd?
Never heard of that in any other culture, I suppose.
Okay.
It's unique, I suppose.
Okay. Yeah, we've been introduced to these things. He brought a whole bunch of goods with him. And so now we're introduced to, or we're shown some of the things that he brought. It would be, now what's his, so we can think this out a little bit further. His intention for coming is to find a wife, but not only find a wife, but do what?
Bring her back.
And so how is the family supposed to know? How is Rebecca supposed to know whether or not this guy's like on the up and up? Yeah. Right? So the jewelry says not only are you going to be taken care of, you're going to be very well taken care of.
Right, because brother noticed him.
Yes. Yes. There's another reason he noticed them. But that's, you're being kind to Laban. What else?
She runs a lot.
Who else runs? Who else runs?
The brother.
Yeah. Uh-oh. Maybe her running's not so good.
I think it's interesting how she took it upon herself that they do have plenty of room in the house and plenty of both straw and fodder and... that she did that kind of without asking for permission that this man and all these other, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Kind of interesting.
Yeah, that's a really positive thing. And that's called, what do we call that? Hospitality. And where have we seen hospitality in Genesis? There have been a few places we've seen it. Where have we seen it? Abraham with the Lord in chapter 18. Where else have we seen it? Yeah, in chapter 19, good. Where else have we seen it? Melchizedek comes out in chapter 14 with bread and wine, right, when Abraham's returning.
But kind of those are all men doing that, and for her to be a young female. I just didn't know that.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. Yeah.
Yeah.
But the hospital, so yeah.
She has the freedom to do that.
Yeah, not knowing the circumstances there, whether or not that's appropriate. She's definitely backed up by Laban. But the theme of hospitality, really important. Because it is showing, it's not only showing It's showing the success of the servant's mission already. So there's, so his mission has been successful as far as what he's been sent to do. Now everything is left up to Rebecca and the and her family. And the hospitality is a very, very important part of that. It's a really significant step. It also plays a role later on when the servant says that he needs to go immediately. But if we get to that tonight, we'll get to that. Anything else? Last call?
I mean, he worshiped God. You know, he worshiped
the Lord. Yes. His response, yeah.
You know, I mean, this had to be a tremendous faith builder. I mean, if he wasn't a believer, you would think that this would have caused him to be a believer.
Yeah.
It seemed like he was there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The servant trusts God. And the demonstrates that in his prayer, and then to see the Lord come through. He's seen, if this is Eliezer from chapter 15, then he's seen quite a bit. He's seen how God has been faithful to Abraham, and so there's no reason for him not to pray this way.
Right.
So yeah, absolutely.
So why did she tell her mother's household about these things?
Good. Instead, what sticks out to you about that?
It mentioned her mother's household and not her father's.
Good. Yeah, her father is going to come up later on. It's Bethuel, and he's going to be part of the conversation with the servant about his request, what he's there for. But even then, Laban kind of takes over. But that's part of the that's part of custom where the older brother, the firstborn brother, would kind of have that administrative authority. But as far as the mother's household, I don't know why she's singled out rather than the father. It could be as simple as she was there, and he wasn't. But I don't know. But it is an odd thing. So unfortunately, I don't have any more. That was customary. Women tend, and even today in Middle Eastern cultures, women stay with women, and women spend time with women, men spend time with men. There's not much of a intermingling, even in families. So, and it could be that there's, so with this big of a household and this, the ability to take in not just this man, but also the men who were with him and their camels, and to have enough straw or have enough bedding and a place for all the camels, food for them as well. It seems like they're wealthy too. So it could be that the mother's household is actually, this is where the mom lives. And the husband, her father, doesn't live in the same place. So, which that would also be typical. Because we'll see at the end of the chapter, Isaac is not with Abraham. Isaac is in a place south. But Isaac is still part of Abraham's household. So that may be something there too, that they've got a riverfront home, and then they've got a bluff home or something like that. Good. Okay. So we're picking it up here right when Rebecca has been running around, filling up the troughs with water for the camels, And so now we get into it. When the camels had finished drinking, remember that the man had been looking to see whether or not she was going to finish the job. When the camels had finished drinking, then the man took a gold ring weighing half a shekel and two bracelets for her arms weighing 10 shekels. So we've got a ring and we've got two bracelets. Later on, we see that this is a nose ring in verse 47. So it's put in her nose. I have to look at my notes later on. I think that has something to do with betrothal stuff. But half shekel, 10, does anybody have any measurements on here? Yeah. About 1 shekel was 2/5 of an ounce or 11 grams.
It says, my Bible says 2315.
2315? Yeah. Okay. Did you chase that?
400 shekels of silver. At this time, a shekel was a weight.
Half an ounce. So if you have
the field sold for a high price.
So the ring is a quarter of an ounce, and then the two bracelets are, if you're 10 shekels, can math guy, can you help?
Well, that would be a half an ounce, right?
So yeah, about a half an ounce.
Yeah, so it'd be five.
5 ounces. 5 ounces. See, yeah, this is why. Numbers just blanking out. I can't think anymore. So, 5 ounces. Is there anything comparable that you can think of as far as 5 ounces? And they, I think they're weighing 5 ounces.
Like a gold eagle is an ounce in there.
A gold what?
Like an American gold eagle.
Oh, okay.
An ounce, and they're quite a bit bigger than a half dollar.
Okay. That's a half ounce?
No, that's 1 ounce.
That's 1 ounce. So 5 of those would be like one of these bracelets.
It'd be pretty weighty.
Yeah, pretty weighty. And they're both gold. So this is, it's showing wealth. It's definitely showing wealth. Now what's odd about this is that he places the gold on them, on her, before he asks her who she is. So this is like, because it's not just any woman that he needs. He needs a woman from the specific household, right? And so now he says, oh, by the way, please tell me whose daughter you are. Who do you belong to? What household do you belong to? So he's got two questions. Tell me who you are, and is there room? We need a place to stay for the night. And obviously this picks up the hospitality theme, motif that we were talking about earlier. And she said to him, I am the daughter of Bethuel, son of Milcah, whom she bore to Nahor, which is exactly what we find in chapter 23 when we're told, I'm sorry, not chapter 23. This is chapter 22 after the, it's reported to Abraham after he gets back from the sacrifice of Isaac that his brother has this big family. So this, and who did Abraham say you need to go see, you need to go find? This particular family.
Yeah.
So this takes care of number one, who are you, who do you belong to? And then two, the hospitality. Verse 25 is the hospitality issue or question. We have plenty of both straw and fodder and room to spend the night. So they're wealthy too, because not only is drawing water for 10 camels going to be a tough ask, so is like, just, do you happen to have room for all of us, this whole caravan? And they do. So so God has led the man and his caravan where they needed to go, and that's what he recognizes. Right now, he bows. This is a posture of worship. And then here's the act of it. The man bowed his head and worshiped the Lord and says, blessed be the Lord, the God of my master, Abraham. So this is the highest praise. So if there's degrees of praise of God, this would be the the highest one. Now this, he's saying, remember that he is saying this in front of Rebecca. That's going to be important for later. But who is it, how does he talk to, or how does he talk to God, or how does he identify God? He's the God of my master Abraham. So that's going to be, that's also important for what's about to happen.
Just like verse 12.
What's that?
Just like verse 12. The Lord is the God of
the Lord. Oh, yes. Yeah. Yeah, when he prays. Yes. Yes. Good. So, and this is the God who is not forsaken his steadfast love and his faithfulness. So he's been faithful.
Do you think this prayer is in response to, because it doesn't specifically say that he put those things on her. I mean, it just says that took a gold ring away. It just says he took them. So I don't know whether or not then she put them on, then that was a, then that's why he was like, you know, she's responding to this.
No, it's one whole. It's one
on
whole. So the taking of those rings would be, it implies putting them on her.
Okay.
Yeah. Now, whether or not he did the nose, I mean, likely not. Whether he gave them to her and she put them on, or she just gave them, he just gave them to her and now they're in her hands, mm-hmm. that could be as well.
But she wasn't rejecting it.
Right, wasn't rejecting it, but it's more about the, it's not so much about verse 22, but verse 23, when he asks, who are you? Because it's not only did God follow through on the prayer, on answering the prayer, but the exact woman that he needed, that he was sent for, this is the woman that happened. This is the woman that he happened to ask and that he happened to say. He didn't, because the servant did not attach this like request of, and let that woman be from this particular household. He only does the one prayer of let this happen. And so this is like beyond what the servant has asked. And so that's why he praises God in this way, because it's all working out this way. So I think the gold bracelets and everything like that comes, that's important for what's about to happen. And that's why I think it's in the order that it's in. Because it's kind of flipped, like, who are you? And then you would have the putting on the gold bracelets. But I think Moses puts it together this way to highlight what happens second rather than what the gold bracelets. And then he's going to pick it back up with those bracelets in the ring later on. Abraham's been faithful. And I'm sorry, God has been faithful to Abraham. And then Yahweh has led me in the way to the house of my master's kinsman. I mean, it's just like directly. This city, this time of day, this woman, it's exactly who I needed. So Ephesians 3:20, God is able to do beyond all that we ask or think. And this is, here's an example of that. Another passage, just in thinking about how the man approaches this situation. He prays a specific prayer, and then he acts. The Proverbs 16:9 says that the man, I wrote it down, man makes his plans, but Yahweh directs his steps. So we make our plans, but we're entrusting ourselves to God to accomplish those plans. And that's how it should be. We're not frozen in place, but we act, we do things, but we also do those things dependently. And that's how the servant does this. So anything more on verses 22 to 27?
You keep saying that Abraham told him to go to this family, but I can't find where that is.
Oh.
We know that Abraham told him. Back at the end, 24.
So swear by the Lord. So verse 3. And then verse, so don't, yeah, verse 4, but go to my country and to my kindred and take a wife for my son Isaac. So, yeah, so you're right. It's only kindred, it's general, but who's the one who's at this place? It's this particular family, and we've been introduced to that family back in chapter 22.
Okay.
So, I'm over specifying. Yeah. So, good catch. Yeah. Good. Anything else? Okay, so now we move into 28 to 32. So then the young woman ran, so she's doing a lot of running, and she tells her mother's household about these things. And Rebecca had a brother whose name was Laban. All right. Who's Laban? Rebecca's brother, yes. And we should, I know sometimes I say, well, we haven't gotten there yet, and so we wait until. But the more I'm reading, the more like, we need to take in the whole of the book. So what do we know about Laban in previous readings, in your previous readings of Genesis? Yes, that's one way to look at it. He did not treat Jacob very kindly. Did Jacob deserve to be treated kindly?
They were both deceivers.
They were both deceivers, yes. Good. Good. What does Laban recognize about Jacob's presence with him by the time Jacob's about to leave?
He was blessed like crazy.
Yes, like ever since Jacob got here.
Yeah.
Yeah, ever since Jacob got here, I've been... Yes, blessed.
Like crazy.
Like crazy. Yes, that's what you said. Okay, and what are some of the schemes that he comes up with to keep Jacob?
Oh yeah.
Well, he
gave him the wrong daughter.
Yeah.
Gave him the wrong daughter. So first, it's Jacob comes up with, "Hey, I'll serve you for 7 years to marry Rachel,"
yeah.
And then obviously. Jacob's not paying attention, Behold, it was Leah. I mean, that's really, woke up in the morning, it was Leah, not her, not Rachel. And then what does Laban say?
It's not in our tradition.
It's not in our tradition. We don't marry off the younger before the older. Of course, that's something he could have said 7 years ago.
Nice to know that.
Yeah.
He is quite right about that.
And so, hey, serve me for another 7 years, finish this woman's week, and then you marry Rachel next week, right? So he's a schemer. He's also greedy, right? So these are some things like, here's the origin story for Laban, and like, oh, I know why he is the way that he is, because he's always been that way. So, all right, we meet Laban, and what does Laban do? He ran out.
He ran too.
Oh my goodness. Oh no, Laban runs too. This does not spell well for Rebecca. Maybe she's not so great.
Does it actually have the word ran out? Because this translation doesn't. He came out.
In verse 29?
Yeah. Oh no, I'm sorry. 29.
Yeah, so later on it says came out. Okay. So yeah, but so it's kind of interesting how this Laban goes out, but then verse 30 backs it up. It gives you some background information, and then it says he went out. But so what I think goes on there is that Moses says Rebecca ran, like, but Rebecca's a runner, right?
She just we know that. Three trips down to this
right? Yeah, we know she's that. She's a runner, and she just likes to run, right? She's like, who's the girl, the here from Gerard. Kaylee Logue, yeah. There's some kind of 5K run with Kaylee here next week or something at Fall Festival. Anyway, I saw it on the sign.
Well, that says Carly.
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 That's her mom?
Carly passed away.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that.
They tore the people that are sponsoring the race, their daughter passed away.
Oh.
And she was a runner.
Oh, okay.
So come around with Carney.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Good, I'm sorry.
Good story. It's a good, good cause.
Okay.
You know Carney.
Well, no, yeah. But I know Dave.
You know Dave.
Yeah.
I kind of, okay.
We have,
like 30 years old, she got a brain tumor.
I'm sorry to hear that. Yeah. Okay. So, yeah, Rebecca's a runner, but now Laban's a runner. Say, it's just a coincidence.
So one time when I was studying the prodigal son, when the son came back, it said the father ran out to meet him.
Yeah.
And my commentary said, in that culture, an old man never ran.
Mm.
It was uncharacteristic for an old man to run.
No.
Because, you know, he has a robe on. And it just shows how much he wanted to be with his son. He ran.
Yeah.
So I don't think there's a correlation here.
Well, Laban and Rebecca are both young, so they could run.
Or probably son's dad is
running. Right. Yeah. So I'm just highlighting this because later on Rebecca's not going to turn out so great, and I think Moses is tying them together. So there's that. I mean, it's just, the Bible's pretty awesome. Laban ran, and we'll, this was actually one of the application points that we'll get to here in a moment, but Laban ran out toward the man to the spring. Now, this is background. So this is all background right here in the brackets in verse 30. As soon as he saw the ring and the bracelets on his sister's arms... What the ring and the bracelets, what are they made of?
Gold.
Gold, right? And heard the words of Rebekah, his sister. Thus the man spoke to me. What did she say to him? What did she recount?
The story, right? I
mean, yeah.
It was the whole encounter.
Yeah.
And what the man said to her and all that. Yeah.
Good. So, and what did the man, so that's the question I should have asked. What did the servant say to Rebekah? I'm sorry, what did the servant say? I'm getting this all bad. He asks her, who are you and do you have a place for us, right? This is what I said. And then he prays in Rebecca's hearing. And who does he mention?
Blessed be Yahweh, God of Abraham.
God of Abraham, good, yeah. So Yahweh, God of Abraham, been faithful, right? So, Laban runs out there, but then we need to know this information. Moses wants us to know that he saw the ring and the bracelets. And he heard what she said, which includes what the servant prayed. And so what does Laban do? Behold, the servant was standing by the camels at the spring. And he said, this is Laban. Come in, who? Oh, blessed of the Lord. Oh, Laban, he knows how to do, he knows how to connect some dots here, doesn't he? Right? So I'm not going to read Laban charitably here. Just so you know, he's a bad guy, and he's a bad guy from the beginning. Which makes Jacob a really bad guy too, by the way.
But he's a schemer.
He's a schemer, yes. Yeah. And we're seeing that right from the moment that we're introduced to him.
Yeah.
So, why do you stand outside? For I have prepared the house and a place for the camels. So again, hospitality here. So he's cashing in on what Rebecca promised to the servant. And so the man came to the house, unharnessed the camels, and gave straw and fodder to the camels, and there was water to wash his feet and the feet of the men who were with him, and we stop there. So this verse 32 essentially says, and this is how they arrived at the house. But with this episode of introducing Laban, just how he sees the He sees the ring and the bracelets. He hears what it is that the Rebecca's recounting of her interaction with the servant. He connects the dots, you know, that, hey, Yahweh's a really big deal for this guy, so I'm going to make him a really big deal too. So there's a few things to kind of point out here is that we get, without entering into Laban's mind, we do see what he's tempted by, what he's enticed by. And so this would be, hey, look, wealth, and then making perhaps, I mean, at this point, we don't know, but by the time we get to the end of his life and his interaction with Jacob, we do know that he is willing to manipulate the circumstances in order to benefit from them, right? So here, if we're just introduced to him here, then we know where this ends for him, and we see some of its beginnings. So for us, and when we think about this, like, we don't want to turn into Laban. So how do we not do that? Well, recognize how we're tempted. Recognize how we're enticed. So see it in somebody who's, it's being pointed out to us, and he ends up a failure. See it in him, and then just examine yourself. Where are you enticed? Recognize your temptations. Don't fall into sin. That sort of thing. But then also, Moses doesn't. So that's on one side. We see what Laban does and how he responds. But then on the other side of it, just the hiddenness of it, he's not bringing this out. Like, hey, I saw what you gave to my sister, and I want some too. He hides it, right? And he's not, maybe he's being deceptive here, maybe he's not. And so I'm just saying that sin is deceptive. Is Laban entering into it here, or is he trying to manipulate things here? We don't know, but that's part of the point. It's hidden, maybe it's hidden from him, but that's, sin is deceptive. And sin is hidden, whether we're actively hiding it ourselves or it's hiding itself from us. But then this brings up where things end up going with Laban. He is a deceiver. So if he's deceiving, how is the servant supposed to know? He can't. Deceivers deceive, right? And you don't know that you're deceived until you've been deceived. So what do? Not assume the worst of somebody, but instead depend on God, yeah. Which is exactly what the servant does, right? He depends on God. So how do you avoid a situation where you're going to be taken advantage of? Well, you can't necessarily, but you can depend on God and ask for his protection, ask for wisdom, ask for discernment, a listening ear, so on and so forth. So just some practical application there, just based on what we know about Laban in the future. Anything to question about that or add to it?
Well, it's very possible that Laban doesn't know that the servant is going to want to take Rebecca away the next day. Maybe
right.
He thinks the servant is going to keep her anymore.
Neither Rebecca or anybody else. She only knows, like, this guy, I just did this, and this guy gave me this stuff, and praised God in front of me, and said he was from our relatives who left. You remember they left like 100 years ago before I was born, and all that stuff? That's all they know, right? So Laban maybe sees.
Possibly.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, later on, we're not going to be able to get to it tonight, but later on, when just look at it at verse 55. So at the end of verse 54, this is the next day, and this is after they've eaten, you know, enjoyed the hospitality. Typically, you're supposed to stay if you're being, like, you aren't released from the hospitality if you're receiving it, if you're the guest. you're not released until you are released, until they say you can go. And he's like, and the servant wakes up the next day and says, I'm out of here. Send the girl away with me, right? And so that's out of the ordinary. And what is, Laban's included in this, so is the mom. But her brother and her mother said, let the young woman remain with us a while, at least 10 days, after that she may go. What it says in Hebrew, in Hebrew is, let her stay a day or 10. And so it's like, which one is it like when we get to 10 days? What do you know? And so, and this actually happens later on in Israel's history in 1 Kings. You remember so this is after the split north and south, and after Jeroboam is in power, and he sets up the altars and the golden calves and says to the northern tribes, worship here, not in Jerusalem. And then you have that episode where you have the man of God from Judah who comes in and makes Jeroboam's hand white and stiff, like he can't draw it back after he's saying, kill that prophet because of what the prophet had said. And then the prophet does his job, and his job is to go there, do this, and come back. Don't stay anywhere. Don't receive any hospitality or anything like that, right? And then but then there's another prophet in Israel who hears about this guy from one of his sons, and he's like, which way did he go? And so he gets on his donkey and chases him down, right? And says, hey, what are you doing? Come back with me. And he's like, no, I can't. The prophet from Judah says, no, I can't. I'm under strict orders not to go. But actually finds him as he's sitting under a tree. So he's taking a break, right? He's not supposed to do that. And so the prophet from Israel says, well, the Lord sent me a message saying that you need to come with me. And the narrator tells us that he was lying. And so the prophet from Judah's like, well, I'll go, okay. And then it ends up that he dies the next day on his way. And actually, I told that whole story, and it doesn't have anything to do with this one because I was thinking of another one.
They can finish it out. So
yeah, you're right. Well, I didn't realize it until I got like, wait a second, he doesn't stay. Because he's actually told you're going to die the next day because you didn't do what...
He was told not to stay.
Right, yeah, yeah. What's the one where he...
This is a good story.
Yeah. Yes. Oh, I think it was. It's in Judges with the Levite and his concubine, and he's like, he decides to, and he ends up staying like three different days, and you know they're drinking and having a merry time and all that. That doesn't end well either. Sorry, I just good stories for about 5 minutes there. Doesn't really have anything to do with what we're talking about, but. If the Lord tells you to do something, do it, okay? Which also is a warning to say, don't go around saying that the Lord's telling you to do something when you won't do it. Just saying. Saying from experience, too. All right.
Just stick to the text.
And that's what I should have done this whole time. And actually, this is where I'm going to leave us until next month. Because if we go any further... Like, we have to go another 20 verses. And you know me, that's not going to happen. So, unfortunately, I was really wanting to get to the end of this. And poor time management. So this is where we'll stop. But it gets really, really good after this. And we're not going to be able to meet for another month because of the... on the 20th, I'll be participating in a elder ordination council or something like that. So won't be able to meet here. So and that ends up being a good thing, providential thing, because the next part of the passage is really just the servant saying, here's what happened. So we'll not only get a review, but we'll also make ground as so we'll like do both at the same time. So you see how the Lord takes care of us, even when we're inept and, you know, not doing well. So anyway, I had fun tonight. Hopefully you learned something. So any questions at the end? Yeah.
Are we finishing at 33?
No.
Okay.
I think the passage ends at 32 as far as breaking it out, because then 33, 33 just starts in on the,
telling of the business.
Yeah. Why? Tell us what happened. And actually in verse 33, I will tell you this. So the verse 33, speak on or tell us, when you get back down to verse 49. Now, if you're going to show steadfast love and faithfulness to my master, tell me, and if not, tell me that I may turn to the right or to the right hand or the left. And so this, so back up in verse 33, that actually brackets the two. So the telltale.
So it's interesting when Rebecca has her children and Esau wants to kill Jacob, she sends Jacob to labor.
Yep. He'll take care of you.
And she says, just stay a few days.
Yes. Yes.
20 years later.
Stay a few days until Esau calms down.
Yeah, right.
Yep.
So that's
yep. And, but, yeah, just to, so I'm glad you brought that up to finish the story with Rebecca. Like, she's a runner too, right? Laban's a runner. Rebecca's a runner. How does Jacob end up being sent to Laban in the first place? Deception. Rebecca deceives her own husband by telling Jacob to put on Esau's clothes. I'll put, and Jacob's like, this is a terrible plan. Like, what if he asks me a question?
Yeah.
I don't sound like Esau.
Right.
Like, oh, don't worry about that. This is basically what Rebecca says. And so.
You can't blame her. It's in her DNA.
Right. And so you can't blame Jacob either, which is why he has to limp for the rest of his life. So, I mean, she's a runner, right? Laban's a runner. Man, I love the Bible. It's just so great.
Interesting, yeah.
I told Dr. Hall I mowed those dishes on Highway 7 for 7 years. I'm still mowing. It's been 40 years.
You only got one wife out of it.
40 years. I'm still mowing. That wasn't the deal.
That wasn't the deal.
40 years.
That just proves your love for your wife.
You only got one wife, though. That's a good thing.
Which ends up being a good thing. Having one wife ends up being a good thing. Right, Linda?
What do you mean, ends up? It's part of the beginning.
You're right. You're right. The whole thing. Marriage is great, especially when there's only one. Wife, husband, couple. Okay, anything else? Like, anybody want to save me from this? And then we'll pray. No, we're done. Okay, let's pray. Father, thank you so much for this time, and we do ask that that you would help us, give us wisdom when we are dealing with people who are deceptive. Help us to depend upon you, and throughout it, and also when we are deceived, to depend upon you in that as well. That our response to deceivers would not be to deceive in return, but to pray for them, to entrust ourselves to your judgment, to your righteous judgment, and to also seek the good of those who would do us harm and do us wrong. So help us to have that attitude and that mindset. Father, also keep us mindful of how we are tempted to sin, and that we would flee temptation, that we would flee lust, that we would flee those things that we know that we are enticed by, and keep us from having a secret life of shame, keep us from hiding our sin, help strengthen us to bring it out into the light through confession, and to deal with it openly, and to not hide us. Please make us fearful of ever considering such a thing of hiding our sin. So help us learn from the example of Laban, and to not be according to him, but instead to be be like Abraham, who walked blamelessly before you, who definitely did grow, and you continually blessed. And so that was to follow in the footsteps of Abraham and to entrust ourselves to you like Abraham's servant. So please help us in Jesus' name. Amen.
Thanks, Noah.
My pleasure.